Oh, hey everybody, and welcome back to the EV Cafe Takeaway, a podcast focused on the zero emission future that we all hope for. Every week I get joined by one lovely member from the EV Cafe team, and does it get more lovely than the lovely Sass, or Sarah Sloman as she is officially called?
Yeah, John wasn't available. I'm only kidding. I'm very happy to be here. I think Josh and I have been long hoping to hop on a podcast together. So thank you for having me, Paul.
Well, way to go to spoil the intro. Yes, we've got Josh. So we get joined by wonderful innovators, pioneers and collaborators on the EV Cafe. And we've got Josh Spencer from Ford and Slater, and we'll find out about what these guys do in a minute. But Josh, welcome to the podcast.
Thank you both so much for having me. Honestly, excited to be a part of it today.
Well, let's just bring down the excitement level. You know, let's get the levels set just about right. But Josh, listen, I've come across you over the last couple of years because I love the commercial vehicle sector, particularly vans. But you're in the big stuff. And that's really exciting. But you have a passion for moving that sector, particularly to zero emission motoring. So Josh, just tell us, first of all, how on earth did you get into commercial vehicles? And second of all, what do you do?
Yeah, great. So I have always known trucks within my career. So I started fixing them back when I was 16. So I'm a product of manufacturer apprenticeship schemes. And then I kind of always knew that I loved working with people and would want to end up helping to lead and all that kind of thing. And so spent a number of years fixing them and then helping customers deal with them when they went wrong and when they needed servicing. And so from there, I found my way into, I spent 2 years with the Audi dealership in Oxford. So spent some time on the car side briefly. And that's where I then met, and I still to this day give a huge amount of thanks to the lady I met who had problems with her car. We sorted those problems and we got talking about what she did, which was running the training school for deaf, for technical training, commercial training. And that's actually 10 years ago this month. And we said, hey, you know, she wanted to get me in front of her team to see how I might deliver technical training. And that's where the DAF journey began, really. So I started out doing some technical training with them. That followed through into technical sales, and I just found my vocation at that point. It's you don't probably realize how difficult it is to convey technical subjects in an easy way until you do it and you find out you're a good translator. That's the metaphor I like to use, because it's hard to take, you know, turns out it is quite tricky to turn what engineers say into what customers want. So found vocation with that. And then it's probably 4 years near enough to the day that the Ford and Slater came to me and said, listen, we're going to get a demo and we'd love you to work with that. So an exciting journey.
Makes a lot of sense to me that you found that vocation, because one of the first interactions we had face to face, as is the world, it's always on digital interactions. But I came back from the event, I think it was up in Birmingham. It's part of the whole ZHID thing that was going on. There was a bit of a sideshow where we all went out for beers after, and you and I spent quite some time talking. And I came away from that saying, what a communicator. Your ability to take a complex subject and then translate it for anybody, including me, listening. And I'm in between the two. I do the same kind of bridging role between thing to thing. And I just loved your fluidity with which you speak and how you highlight the most important things. When you're on your apprenticeship scheme, was that part of that? Or is that something that you added on top to what you learned?
I've kind of always been involved in youth organisations, so I owe probably some of that communicating ability to the fact that I was an air cadet growing up, and so always loved being outgoing and doing different things and stuff. And then I think it probably unbeknownst to me at the time, but actually then the service advisor role was quite similar to that, because you'd be looking after people who, you know, might be in distress situations. They'd have you know, an engine fail or a gearbox blow up or whatever, and suddenly you've got to help somebody, you know, help bring that back to a positive as a for a start, but also help them appreciate why that's gone wrong, what's, you know, ultimately it's going to be a big bill to repair, and help them understand why they've got to spend that and the value within that. So yeah, it's kind of probably something slightly subconscious that I always kind of thought, yeah, hey, that's quite a nice thing to be able to do.
It's fantastic. I love the fluidity with which you kind of handle subjects. And Sarah, you've obviously highlighted that already. But because we've got a really challenging topic, don't we, with the transition to zero emission. And like you say, if you, how do you translate the value of paying 2 or 3 or 4 times the amount for a diesel truck, for an electric truck or a zero emission truck? And so the communication piece is really important. You mentioned the air cadets and growing up and how communication was important. What was it about that growing up period that enabled you to really be a good communicator in the way that you are?
So I grew up quite rarely. I was able to, you know, live just outside of Oxford, and we spent a lot of time being able to play out with our friends and stuff like that. And then from a cadet side, it was, you know, how I love working with people and helping people get the most out of their, you know, journey as well. And I just felt, you know, that probably set that fire within me to be able to be able to do that. And then combining all of this now is super exciting. Like it's lovely to be able to reflect with you both, actually, because then you kind of think, well, it's the journey that's led to where we are today, right?
I know. We were thinking about people that grow up rurally do have a bit of an edge on that, because you are just chucked out the door to go and experience life for yourself. There's no structured school holidays. There's no kids clubs to go to. It's complete carnage, but it does tend to develop excellent communicators, because you're forced to go and find people to discuss things with and find a common ground, even if it's thinly spread. And I think you can really tell that from you. Now, Fordance, that you have a broad job role. Can you give our listeners a little insight? What's your job title? What role do you perform there? And why do we need to know?
Yeah, of course. So you're right. It can cover quite a lot of different things. So I'm the EV and sustainability manager. So probably that's consuming more and more time spent with customers as this expands in terms of the e-truck sales. But actually then, we've worked really hard to bring together various different areas from a sustainability perspective. So we were accredited for the first time with the EcoVadis platform last year. You know, I don't know if you have come across it, but big corporate platform for the recording and then comparisons of sustainability topics. So and people's first sort of assumption is that jumps to environmental, but actually, of course, it's labour and human rights, it's ethics, it's procurement. So whilst it's definitely helped us have focus areas as well, it's also been about promoting what we're already doing as a business. So, you know, for us, it's this EV stuff isn't just a sales tactic, it's intrinsic through the business. And so we've got, you know, people come into, or people come have a truck salesperson come to see them in an electric car. We deliver parts on electric parts delivery vans. We give people electric courtesy cars when they come in to drop a truck off for service. And those things don't happen overnight. And again, I'm super grateful to the ownership of the business for their vision within that, because, you know, it has been a journey and a 4-year journey, which is now only starting to, you know, come to fruition for us. And actually, that's still a huge journey. We're excited to deliver trucks for ZHID this year, and you know, extremely fortunate for it to be quite a number of them. And that's just the start. And I find I keep saying that, like when we got the first demo, that was just the start. But actually, we're just at the start of that ramp up. Really, so exciting.
But I mean, this is the point, Josh. You really are pioneering this whole thing, and it is a very cool journey to be on. But I would like the idea of this connectedness between the vehicles and transport and all of that sort of stuff, but the wider sustainability message, you know, it very much is E, S, and G. You know, it's that whole bit. Yes, the environment, but talk to us a little bit about that ESG, and do you see more and more customers kind of considering everything they're doing, particularly from a sustainability point of view, but how it all weaves together?
Yeah, I think I was talking to somebody about this only yesterday around the measures that we all have to take as business partners to encourage and accelerate this transition. So we have to demonstrate that we're practicing what we preach in all areas for customers to, one, see you know, that as being us as being a credible business partner, but also it's about us proving that actually we see the economic sense in this, and so should they. So with our electric parts delivery vans, I put together a business case and you know, help the board appreciate the economic sense behind those decisions, driven by their environmental and ethical, you know, benefits that would bring.
It's a good balance to strike. It makes me wonder, when you opened up and you said about how much a diesel truck is to buy or whatever versus a EHDV, is that gap closing at all? I know that everyone says it's 4 or 5 times, but what is it really? What is the difference?
So yeah, I think it's closing hugely, right? So the demonstrator vehicle that we started with 4 years ago, that had 130 miles of range, could carry 9 tons of payload, and cost somewhere in the region of £280,000. We're now in a position where we've got vehicles on the market, which obviously these are the vehicles we're going to be delivering for ZHID, and they'll go twice as far, they'll carry 2.5 times the payload, and they're costing less. So now we're in a position where, you know, we are very much approaching probably close to 2-to-1. I think I think we can get very close to 2-to-1 this year, 2-to-1 for cost. And actually at that point, what's really exciting for ZHID, and I know it's a reasonably common term in the space right now, but for any of your listeners who are not familiar with it, ZHID being the zero emission haulage and infrastructure demonstrator, snappy title.
Hang on. Sorry, just go on. Well done, well done. That was absolutely brilliant, because we were just about to get the guns out and arrest you for big acronym.
I know, yeah.
Acronym police. Yeah. Exactly. We did ESG. You didn't explain that one either.
I didn't, did I? No. That was my fault. I'm the policeman. Environment, social, and governance. I'm very, very sorry, but it's an industry-wide thing. But do go back and please explain ZHID for us and the project in its wider form.
Don't worry, I hate a TLA, and that was an FLA, wasn't it? That's a 5-letter acronym. God, it's terrible. So, yeah, it's the ZHID, the Zero Emission Haulage and Infrastructure Demonstrator, will bring, I think it's between 300 and 350 electric tract units to the roads of the UK this year. From what I see from various data points, it will bring at least double the number of high-speed guns. So strategic road network, customer depots, et cetera. And that's £200 million worth of government funding funneled through Innovate UK, obviously through several consortium efforts that then move that around between their operator partners. And again, through you know, a huge amount of work, I recognized with customers 3 years ago through developing the relationships with them that ZERFT, as it was then known, and ZHID as it now is called, that would be the route to starting build some really strong relationships on this stuff, start to give us some early, you know, early volume wins. And so we've ended up with, I think it's just over 15% of the overall volume for the project. So that's really exciting for this year, and couldn't be more grateful for those customers with the sort of trust and faith they're placing in us, because it's a big undertaking. Like this is a, you know, 120, 150 year change within the industry. And it's all, you know, the majority of that change is going to happen within the next 10 years. So I take it very seriously, our responsibility to those customers to get this right for them, really.
He's good, isn't he? He knows his stuff. That's why we got him here. We're going to continue to grill you, I think. One of the things that people think about when they're going to switch to zero emission transport equivalents, in this case, EHGV, they've got to think about how many trader units they're going to need to replace the ones they've already got. How far can they go? Now, we have a partner to do with the EV Cafe in Dynamon. And we, a couple of months ago, had an awesome webinar where they came on, Angus came on, and told us that some research they had done showed that a single 400 kilowatt charger in Cannock, so strategically located in the UK, could support an additional 11 EHGVs to convert away from the diesel counterpart. Now, that's a cracking stat. That was a real eye-opener about how trucks are one thing, charging is another. Tell me about how you feel ZHID is going to join those dots together for us.
Well, I think, to be honest, through all of my customer conversations, the truck is almost secondary. And in many cases, it is secondary because we have got a product which, across a whole balance of attributes, delivers a really well-rounded package. But actually, it's so much more important that that customer understands how they're going to charge it, where they're going to charge it, you know, what that looks like for the business, what the cost looks like. So for me, it's always about introducing the right partners. Of course, ZHID have amazing partners that they're already introduced to. So that's, you know, has made my life easier, shamelessly, in the short term. And I love the work that Angus and the team at Dynamon have done over the last couple of years. And it's that ability for helping customers recognize that actually, you know, it doesn't need to be one gun per truck or things like that. In fact, it should be many more, because you need to spread the cost of that infrastructure across multiple assets working hard that are sweating to earn that sort of return on investment. So, like, I've got ZHID customers who are talking about 6-to-1 ratios of trucks to charger guns. And that's exciting because by their metrics, they're having, you know, over 300 trucks worth of charging going in this year alone, which is, you know, that's 10, 15, 20% of big fleet sizes going in, right?
Amazing. Yeah, absolutely brilliant.
Absolutely. And Josh, listen, I think it takes a special kind of person to do the kinds of things that, one, you're doing, and two, the attitude and the mindset, you know, that is. And I'm going to let the listeners into a little secret, because this is take two of the Josh podcast.
It really is.
And it was just, you know, it was a little family challenge in the shape of a small boy. But you were the personification of kindness and that fatherhood figure. It was a thing of beauty to watch. So you try and manage what we remember from back in the day of Zoom calls and homeworking and all that kind of stuff from COVID. But it was just one of those moments. It just didn't quite work out. But what it taught us, Josh, was that you are a beautiful man. And I know, from a man to say to a man that you're a beautiful man, it's sometimes a little bit, you know, odd, weird, whatever. But you are a beautiful man, and it really comes across in the way that you kind of carried yourself and do carry yourself in all that you do. Where does this come from? How did you become this person? You're a good, kind man. What do you do outside of work that just kind of gives you this background? Is it your family? Is it friends?
Firstly, it's overwhelming to say that. Like, it's really kind. I don't know, really. Like, I think with it, and it took me like 13 years to get it done, by the way, but I have just finished my Open University degree in business management, and there's a lot of psychology within that, of course. And to be honest, like, I think that helps, has certainly like been such a guiding light for me in helping me broaden my perspective in terms of being able to take other people's perspective. And that, of course, helps you build such, you know, infinitely higher levels of compassion and empathy for situations. And like, I really believe in that, in the stuff that I do day to day, because if I didn't come to the huge challenge we all face with decarbonisation of transport from a position of compassion and empathy, I just wouldn't be able to develop the relationships and support the customers that I'm working with in the way that I've been able to, because I just wouldn't have any connection with what they're trying to achieve. And so for me, like, it's I mean, it's, yeah, on the one hand, it's absolutely like lovely to hear you say that. And at the same time, for me, it's kind of business as usual, because I couldn't do those things and couldn't be able to support those customers in the way that I do without coming at things from that perspective. And again, like, I'm super grateful to work in a culture where that's that kind of behavior is championed. Like, I think there are still far too many businesses in this world where that kind of behavior isn't championed and isn't, you know, there are different behaviors that are perhaps, you know, allowed to proliferate. And actually we all kind of, I think the more that we can all go into this world trying to come from a place where everyone's always trying to do the right thing and no one ever means to, you know, do the wrong thing, quote unquote, in someone else's eyes. Like, it's, we're all just trying to get through life, aren't we, really? And how we do that is, you know, yeah, hopefully by being nice. It's the way forward, isn't it?
I think we should take that and make it a little strapline. Just by being nice, it's the way forward, isn't it? And it is the way forward. I love it, Josh. And I just want to commend you. So from somebody that isn't very good at staying attentive on anything, I will tell you, so I have two O-levels. Now, the O-levels, for those of you listening that are of the younger generation, was a thing way back in the distant past that were exams. And I failed all my exams at school. And I had a time where I could take the exams, the final exams, and I managed to cram them into 6 weeks. And that is the only way that I was able to take them, because I just rammed. So O-level English and O-level maths, the only two qualifications I hold. I had to cram for those in 6 weeks, and I managed to pass them. To do something over 13 years fills me with utter dread. I barely can stay attentive for 13 minutes. So real, really, really well done. And it just says the measure of the man. But Saz, this guy, what a guy.
I know. And there was this moment in the absolute tech chaos meltdown that we had the last time we tried to record this together, where we didn't realise that you still had your headphones on. And Paul and I were like, God, he's so patient. He's such a wonderful dad. Look at him. He's really being kind. You know, it was just lovely that you got to hear that, because, you know, credit where it's due. I really believe in credit where it's due. And like you say, 13 years is a true test of endurance. Now, I'm kind of, Paul and I, we get on personally, I think, ridiculously well, and we work together beautifully. And I'm the other way around.
I've got,
you lie, you love it. I've got loads of GCSEs and loads of qualifications, and it took ages to get them too. And I've got two smaller Open University courses that I loved doing. And I'll second that. Being part of that OU environment, the Open University environment, is really about digging deep in yourself, but also looking around you. And this decarbonisation mission that we are on is longer than 13 years. You know, a lot of us sort of really wanted to do this from a super young age, and applying your business nous to what's now a thriving e-truck, hopefully, environment just makes me wonder, you're going to get bereavement loss over not having to do your coursework now. What's next? What learning are you looking to do next?
Yeah, it is funny. It's, I think I'm sort of on a short break, and 13 years, like I probably had a 4 or 5 year gap in the middle, right? So then it wasn't the right time at that point, picked it up again and was like, right, let's do the right amount of courses every year to get this done. But actually, like, across that period of time, my values and belief system and my, you know, my view of the world, my way of approaching things just evolved over a period of time, which, you know, I never thought. And I, Paul, I was a bit like you at school. Like, I knew that I just wanted to get out and fix trucks and, you know, earn a little bit of money so I could, you know, go out the weekend, get a car, whatever. And then, you know, as that's slowly evolved, I've come to love, you know, learning and finding out more and challenging my own perspective. And, you know, how can we, and don't get me wrong, like, the first, I feel like I've been on a journey in the last 4 years, because I was never naive about the fact I was showing somebody a very expensive, not very high range lorry, which was lovely. And everyone was very kind and said it worked really well, but was probably a bit too expensive. And so for the first 2 years, I was the master of failure. Like, I don't know if you've ever listened to Elizabeth Day's How to Fail podcast. some of the guests that Elizabeth has. Like, I will lean into failure always, because it's like, how can it, for me, it's always just it's an opportunity for how I might improve and do things differently next time. And that's like how we win at this stuff, right? It's I did a proposal for 250 vehicles worth of e-trucks at the back end of last year to a customer who has probably bought two or three, but I'm like, no, your whole London business could change overnight. We can do different ranges. We can do, here's a charging partner who'll do 120 bay, you know, charging site, et cetera, et cetera. And yes, we didn't get that, but now actually into the new year, I've got a customer who's like, you better get that dusted off because that sounds like something we'd absolutely love to explore with you. So that wasn't for nothing. Yeah, okay, at the time I was a bit like, well, fine. But actually, it's sort of been helpful even sooner than I thought it would be.
Yeah. Oh well, fine. Did you really react like that? I don't know.
The roller coaster of sales, Paul. The roller coaster
I know.
Of sales.
I remember it well. But you touched on sort of digging deep there, and this is a skill or a quality that is hard learned, right? So talk to us about that time that immediately springs to mind that was the toughest time that you've faced. I mean, you know, you could be forgiven for thinking you've just cruised on up into life, but it sounds like you've had to dig deep at different times and different points. Talk to us about a time where you did dig deep and how you learned to sort of do what you do today in terms of being able to keep going.
Yeah. So I think firstly, I think resilience and failure are not something that society generally are taught. Like, no one teaches you that everyone fails and that's okay. Like, there's not that mentality, is there, in school and exams and all of that kind of stuff. Everyone's led to believe, you know, failure is a dirty word. Failure doesn't give you anything. It's like, but that couldn't be further from the truth, could it? And I think it's all about, there's an amazing book. Is it Susan Jeffers? I might be getting the author wrong, but Feel the Fear and Do It Anyway. Have you heard of that book? Love.
Heard the phrase.
Absolutely. Yeah. I'd recommend the book. It's incredible. And I'm always like, people looking from the outside might go, why does he need to read that? But actually, like, there's always something that you can pick up, or it reinforces, you know, helps validate how you're feeling and stuff like that. But I think there are probably two periods. Like, working in a prestige car dealership is the biggest roller coaster. Great cars, sometimes really, really difficult situations to have to deal with, right? And no matter what I'm doing in that situation, yet you feel like a failure, and yet you have to dust yourself off. There's the metaphor of it being swan-like. So you're like serene above the water, kicking like buggery underneath, then it's that sort of stuff, isn't it? And then I left a job, you know, where I probably thought it was a long-term career prospect, like thought, well, do you know what? This is what I need. And I left, you know, in a reasonably quick fashion. Perhaps I didn't, you know, yeah, it was just a situation where it left me feeling, you know, what's me, what does my identity, you know, because jobs do form some of our identity, whether we like it or not, don't they? And I'm very conscious to say some of, like, it's within my grid of my life, and it's not necessarily all of it, but you form that, don't you? And it forms part of yourself. And so when something like that happens, I think you do, and that happened around COVID. And so that was a good opportunity to reflect and think, well, you know, how do we move forward? And then I got to work with the team at Ford and Slater with Tim and Nigel. And at that point, it was kind of like, these are, you know, I thought I'd found my people, and actually I really have found my people. Like, and they found me. And do you know what I mean? Like, that's, I think it's rare to be able to say that, isn't it? But yeah.
What was the worst job you ever had? Go on, tell us. Spill beans. Jobs do inform us. Go on. But, you know, I'm pretty sure there's going to be some grotty. I used to clean at a school in after hours, and it was a special needs and education facility school. And I would say that's the worst job I've ever had. You wouldn't believe what I saw. What about you? That's the worst one that you had.
Oh, goodness. I think for me, it's always been about, like, terrible jobs within a job. So we used to look after a fleet of like food waste recycling trucks. And if if you were given one of those to do an MOT preparation on in midsummer, you knew somebody hated you because it was just not going to be a nice thing to have to do. And at the same time, like I'm 6'2", I'm not a short person. And we also used to then look after a fleet of coaches. And these things were like working 24/7. They're the Oxford Tubes, right? And we would, a team of three of us would turn around an engine out replacement or, you know, repair, whatever, in a 24-hour period, because if one of those buses, this was 16 years ago, if one of those buses was off the road, every 24 hours it was off the road, it was losing £4,000 of revenue. And that's 16 years ago, right? Wow. So a team of three of us would turn it around. But I remember being a third year apprentice, all of the exhaust lagging was like fiberglass matting. And I used to be the one who'd get the job to remove and refit all of the exhaust matting. So for like 3 days afterwards, I just felt like someone had poured itching powder over me. So those two were the worst. Yeah.
Yeah, they hated you. I'm pretty sure they hated you. Yeah. I don't know why. I can't work it out for myself. So there was something. It's not Josh, definitely. No, we talked a bit about resilience and how school is just not set up for teaching people resilience and that failure is a good thing, as you quite rightly said. And that book you mentioned, by the way, is the backbone of the International Women's Day stuff. It's about, it doesn't matter who you are or where you're from, it's about just thinking about things differently. And the phrase leaning in is overused, but it means to not look at these things as negative, to in fact, the opposite, pull out any potential positives. And thank you for being so candid with us. Now, I had a little bet on with Paul that you also get a lot of your endurance from endurance sport. I'm saying marathons or trail running. How close am I to my horrible judgment?
You're not far off. So I've done a few half marathons. I could never pull myself out the bag to do a full to date. Goodness.
Challenge accepted.
I know. God. I love mountaineering and canoeing and all that kind of stuff. So big into the mountains. I love the peace that they bring. Again, I think it's 15 years ago this year, a group of us did like Wainwright's coast to coast route. So that was pretty incredible. And, you know, being the mad people that we were, we did it in sort of 8 days rather than the 15 he took and stuff like that. But I love that kind of thing. And again, I think it tunes into the human element. So I went up back in September and did the full Snowdon Horseshoe with some friends. So they'd never...
That is so cool.
They'd never crossed Cribgoc before. An Arete Ridge, which, is probably the width of my laptop at times, but then there's a 1,000-foot drop off either side. And obviously there's an adrenaline element to that. But at the same time, like it's... I'd be lying if I said I didn't feel a fear when I went up and did that. But that's like a fear. The body's physiological reaction to fear is the same as it is to excitement, right? So it's just feeling that fear and doing it anyway, isn't it? Like it's, sorry, that probably sounds really corny, but you've got
no,
to.
It's not that. I was more laughing. I was laughing at the fact that for anybody that knows Cribgoc, it is brutal and it's super, super polished, always very windy, often misty. So do you know what? This is one time where I would say feel the fear and don't, because you might not come back if you've never done anything like this and you're going up there in trainers. Generally speaking, there is a direct translation between the fear we feel in sport and the endurance that sport gives us and this long journey that we're on to decarbonize and reach net zero, essentially. And Paul, I know you're the same. You love an outdoor experience. Even just this morning, I caught a glimpse of a beach walk. Is that how you unwind, Paul? How do you find your peace and center?
Well, it's a really good question. I was just reflecting on what Josh was talking about there, because I love that same horseshoe. I've done that same horseshoe many, many, many years ago when I was young enough and fit enough to do it. So it's probably some 20-something years ago, and felt the fear of that drop off that you talked about there, and it is quite something. But I love heights, strangely. So put me on top of a cliff somewhere that is vertical, and just that sense of danger, I suppose, but also
And Paul, and I think Sarah, you hit upon it really well, that it's the same. Resilience building is the same whether you know that you're pushing through a cold, wet, miserable walk, and there's a beer at the end of it, as it is about, you know, I didn't win that order, or this didn't happen, or this truck broke down, or whatever. But actually, there's the reward of knowing that when we get through that, you know, when we get through that journey, there's enjoyment to be had, there's success out of it, like there's the feeling of knowing we're doing something. And I think that it applies across decarbonisation, doesn't it? Like, it's a hard journey, but actually we know that there are successes at the end of it, whatever that may mean or be. And yeah, there's a great connection there, isn't there, I think?
The end is one thing, but I do grow tired of this belief that it's all about the end. What about the actual journey itself? Like, seriously, I'm just noticing many people. If I get one more message that says, we made it through January and it was terrible, and don't worry because we're on to February, March. And I'm like, what was wrong with January? Did you get zero joy from anything that happened? Did you not look at the little buds peeping out of the soil? What about this horseshoe walk where it's wet and miserable and you're looking at your footsteps thinking, I don't know if I can do anymore? Well, you did. So it's not just the fact you made it, you know, to the end.
Pinnacleism is such a problem, I agree. And yes, it is far more about the journey. Like, we had an incredible time with the trucks we were able to work with with people, which we'll be delivering obviously soon. So in no way was just taking the order the end of the journey. Like, it's the start. And then I said it earlier on, like, those trucks, you know, there's a huge amount of work to do within that, with the customers getting into service, but then, you know, that's a tiny drop in the ocean compared to their fleets. And so it all moves forward from there, doesn't it? And yeah, it's so important that there isn't, you're right, I think, Sarah, there isn't an end to that journey. And that's really exciting. Like, I don't know the answers to the question of some of this stuff. Like, and that for me is really exciting.
But something else that I think is also really exciting for you, as we look around your background, there are lots of little, I'm not going to call them toys, but they're representations of your passion for the commercial vehicle world.
Oh, God, I'm so glad you described that, Paul, because not everyone can see, because they might just be listening. That was going very, very dark quickly.
So backgrounds are important, I think, you know, because they tell us a little bit about what people put deliberately in the background to say something about what they do. So, yeah, Sarah's got a sink.
I did nothing.
Not going to go there. but Josh, talk us through your little passion here. Any Lego involved? And
the Lego techniques, and this is, I'm going to share this with you. I realize I'm sharing this with more than just you, but so I'm the kind of dull person who will take a Lego model, and then you can tell I definitely got, this has got a layer of dust on it, because I definitely haven't got time for this these days. But any fan of Lego Technics will know that this is like a big Technics model. But I had to go and like turn it into a recovery lorry and add air suspension and all of that sort of stuff. So I kind of love that stuff.
Amazing.
And I hide it quite well these days. Like, it's the same with the e-truck stuff. Like, I think it's... I know how all of the technology works and what gives us the benefits that we have and all of that kind of stuff, but I don't necessarily need to have to show everyone that on every part of the journey, right? Like, it's, for me, like I said, it's much more about the infrastructure and all of that kind of stuff. And if, you know, if that helps people want to, you know, work with us on the trucks, then that's fantastic, isn't it? Right.
Oh, I just think you've illustrated it beautifully there. The role that you're doing fits perfectly into that Lego Technic habit. So a customer comes to you And yes, they want to talk about trucks, but I get the sense with every communication skill you have, every knowledge facet that you've gathered over this period, no wonder people are coming back later, even if they don't buy at the time, because you're giving them the building blocks. You're showing them the blueprint as to how to build the thing they want to build. And then you're adding a pickup truck on the back just for the hell of it, because you know how to do that. You are an absolute blessing to this industry, definitely. Yeah, there was way more than that last time. I think maybe your son's run off with a couple of them.
Honestly, I was dying inside as there were bits being smashed off of it. I was just like, no, it's fine. You've got to get on with it.
Oh, Josh, listen, it is such a joy to get to know you, and also just to kind of see that passion for the Lego thing. And you can see the time and love and effort that you've put into that. And it's, but I think this is what you do, isn't it? You put that time. We've seen it with your son. We've seen it with your job. We've seen it with your hobbies and habits and things that you love to do. And it's just really clear that you're going to leave a lasting impact. To Sarah's point, really, that you land with people and people come back to you because you've made you've presented yourself in a completely different way than other people do. And I'm going to do something very important right now, and that's to hand you what we normally call the magic wand. So the magic wand, sadly, as
he hasn't for those got of it, has he? You didn't bring it. You don't have it. No.
I didn't bring it. I didn't. So, but so this morning, walking across said beach, I thought, well, what can I bring to the party that will convey? And it's the magic seashell. There we go. Look, so for those of you not looking, goodness. Isn't it a beautiful seashell?
Yeah.
So you've got to listen to the whisper and then whisper back your vision, your mission. So I'm going to hand you the shell. There you go. It's coming through to you right now. You can take
that. You have
that.
To pretend to take
there you
it.
Go.
That's I've
it.
Got it.
That's excellent. It. Yeah, you got it.
There we go.
He's got it. Absolutely. And so what is the wish that you would bring for our industry, for, you know, for your world, your environment? What is the wish that you've got? One, make it wise, make it count. That's the one I was looking for. Make it count.
So firstly, everything you said is so, so kind. And I think we all as an industry have to be better at selling the problem we solve. Now, within that, what I mean is, like you've just said there, I spend less of my time selling the truck. And that's been a journey, right? That's been a journey of evolving into my confidence within it and all that kind of stuff. And it's much more about how we bring together the right partners to unblock objections within people's businesses, to encourage all areas of their of a customer's business to feel that this is the right decision, right? So I started out 4 years ago. I deal with so many sustainability managers or, you know, environmental managers, whatever. And slowly across that time, I think those people have learned as well as I have that you have to, you know, provide something which is appealing to everyone. And so it, yes, absolutely is on an environmental level, but more than that, it's on an economic level. And now that's, of course, becoming easier and easier to do. And so it just becomes a much more holistic approach, really.
So the wish is?
Because I
sell the problem we're trying to solve.
Sell the problem we solve. I can't sell, with the best will in the world, I want to see carbon reduction. I cannot sell all of the trucks out there to do that. So I want everyone to be better at it, right? Like it's...
There you go. Beautiful. So for us all to improve in the way that we... Yes, okay, now, sorry. Forgive me, I was being a bit dense.
No.
But that's perfect.
How we compel people. We've got to compel people better, haven't we?
Yes.
Yeah, thank goodness. I mean, we're doing what we do on the EV Cafe because we genuinely care. Our aim is to grow that community who understands, who asks the right questions, who's supportive, and more importantly to me, progressive. We don't go around in circles and have the same old conversations. We don't point the finger. And actually, my boss is a great one. He says, when you point the finger, and I'm gesturing to the camera here, one point's forward, but 3 point back. So So you've got to always remember that you yourself are accountable in this mess. 1 point forward and 3 points back is an excellent phrase. And, you know, Josh, for me, having you on the show, I wanted people to experience that, frankly, downright trustworthy. I was praying you were going to say something about shoplifting or something just to make me think that maybe you are not just this image of a perfect human who's kind and gentle and supportive, but, you know, everything from growing up rurally to go through to your apprenticeships to having your Open University course with a big break in the middle. We'll come back to that. You didn't tell us what you did for 5 years in the middle. But of course, death-defying ridges and outdoor adventures and kayaking, canoeing and being safe at home with your family when those things aren't happening. To me, you are the epitome of somebody who knows what they need and makes sure that it's a lovely, balanced life. And it's people like you who are going to encourage others to see that decarbonisation can be profitable, can be progressive, and is something that needs to move in the right direction for our industry. So it's huge thanks from me that you would jump on again with us this time without mini you, 6'2" you versus probably 2 foot you. And we got to hear a bit more about what makes you tick.
Lovely words. Thank you so much.
So do you, the five year gap, was there a particular thing or was it just time ran out?
Yeah.
Shoplifting. So that was, you leave that to me.
Oh, so no, the 5 year gap was in study. So yeah, I did the first 3 years and then I moved into the car dealership, which was like full on all the time, like never a moment's rest, 8 till 6 every day. And you just get home and you go, I really can't think, let alone want to. And then, so that was kind of 2 years of that, and then moved into DAF, and then kind of within, yeah, probably did my own apprenticeship within that organization for 3 years. And then it was like a conversation with a really supportive boss one day. He was like, why don't you pick that back up? We'd support you with it. So, you know, then, so the study break more than anything else.
Yeah, yeah. It's so helpful, I think, to see people's journeys. Because when one door shuts, another opens kind of scenario, or, you know, what's for you'll nae go by you, as they have said in Scotland, yeah. I think, you know, it's, it kind of just brings everything together. And listen, you know, I guess we've spoken very positively about you. The reality is because it's all true, clearly.
Yes.
We don't celebrate everybody in the same way. Not that everybody else is bad, but you, the sort of abiding memory that I will have of our conversations and of the way you carry yourself is one of a jolly decent human being. And I think we can learn a lot from jolly decent human beings. And I'm learning, you know, from you. From the way that you carry yourself and the impact that you're making on our industry. And I thank you for that. It's really cool. And so, you know, with that in mind, everybody, listen, connect with this guy on LinkedIn. Check out, you know, the people he works for and, you know, Ford and Slater. They're all doing a good thing in the industry. And, you know, if you've got questions around the decarbonization of trucks, this guy is your man, without any question of a doubt. Check in with him and he will be able to help you on not only the truck, you know, because he's geeked out on his Lego, but the whole infrastructure because he's thinking holistically. Josh, thank you so much for spending time with us today. Have you got any one thing that you want to leave us with? One last thought?
I think gratitude, like you, the EV Cafe team, like seen within the industry to be the leaders on decarbonisation of transport, and for you to say things like that is humbling. Like, it's, you know, it means a lot. So I just thank you, really. It's lovely to have the opportunity to share it with you.
Saz, it's been good, isn't it?
Yeah, really good. The time has absolutely flown by, and this probably will air around the time of International Women's Day, actually, so it makes me remember to share that book.
Amazing
indeed. Fabulous. Well, listen, everybody, if you've enjoyed this podcast, and hopefully I'm pretty sure if you're still listening, you have. therefore, just check out all the other podcasts on the evcafe.org or Apple, Spotify. Follow us there. Follow us on LinkedIn and on the EV Cafe Takeaway podcast page. You can now follow that. All there to help inspire and encourage you on this net zero journey. Have a great day, everybody, and thanks for listening.